This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Today on the program, a Roman Catholic nun's experiences with alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous. Sister Molly Monahan is a member of AA. Sister Molly, by the way, is a pseudonym. She has been a member of AA for more than 18 years now. Sister Molly wanted and expected to find sobriety through AA. What she didn't expect to find was a more meaningful relationship with her God. Sister Molly has written about her journey through AA to a stronger faith. The memoir is titled Seeds of Grace, A Nun's Reflections on the Spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous. Listeners, I invite your telephone calls this afternoon. Your questions and comments are encouraged. Here are the telephone numbers. In Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Seeds of Grace, A Nun's Reflections on the Spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous is published by Riverhead Books. Sister Molly, good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
So how long have you been sober? More than 18 years now?
Yes, I have.
Congratulations.
Since 1983, thank God.
What does it mean to be sober?
Well, that's a very good question, actually, because one of the points I tried to make in the book is that it's not simply a matter of not drinking, although that's an essential component of sobriety. But sobriety, as we in AA speak of it, really means so much more than that. It means emotional stability. It means peace of mind. It means good relationships with others. It means the desire and the ability to be of service. I don't know, maybe you could sum it all up saying it means has a lot to do with love.
How was it that you realized you had a problem with alcohol?
Well, I didn't suffer from the denial that afflicts a lot of people. And it really is denial, you know. It often isn't deceit. But I think maybe because of the way of life that I was devoted to was so incompatible with drinking too much, certainly, that it forced itself upon my attention really at a quite early stage in my sobriety. And it wasn't for me so much hangovers and things like that. It was a terrible emotional state, emotional pain. I hope I never get there again, visit that place again, a place of shame and a sense of failure and negativity and fear and finally really something like despair, just a terribly black place where I felt helpless and hopeless, and I had the good sense to realize, but late, really, that it had something to do with alcohol. Yeah.
Is it accurate to say you were suffering a crisis in your day-to-day life, certainly, but also in your faith?
Yes, I was. I was, because we say in AA that it's a physical, mental, and spiritual disease. Now, really, I have to say, even since writing the book, I've come to a greater understanding of that last, that third. We understand physical disease, you know, and we understand mental illness. And alcoholism is a mental illness, really. But I appreciate even more now than I did when writing the book that it's a spiritual malady. It just deadens the spirit. It just closes down. I couldn't pray. Now, part of that was because I couldn't concentrate for any length of time. For the same reason I'm a great reader, I couldn't read anything of any length. But I didn't think that had anything at all to do with drinking. But the place it leads you to. You know, there are many alcoholics who commit suicide, and that's done out of this terrible feeling of despair and helplessness. So yes, it had a profound effect on my spiritual life.
You write that you were desperate.
Yes.
And so you turned to another sister and finally cried out for help.
Yes.
And what happened then?
Well, then my superior, when I told her of it, because I wasn't the kind of drinker who was falling down or acting up or anything like that, my superior sent me immediately to a 28-day rehab, and that was immensely helpful. Because there I learned what I was up against in this disease and was convinced, which is probably the biggest benefit I got from it, that I needed to go to AA upon leaving the rehab.
Yeah. Mm. The early going wasn't easy for you, nor I suspect is it easy for anyone.
Right.
You were just out of that rehab.
Mm-hmm.
You tell a story in the book about making arrangements to take part in a project with the Episcopal Diocese of Virginia.
Yes.
And you're just rawly sober.
Yes. It's a good way to describe it.
And you had to make arrangements to attend AA meetings with these folks that you were going to be working with.
Yes.
Share that story with us, would you?
Well, you just told it very well. I mean, the outline of it... I think the most important part of it was that I was so convinced of the necessity for AA that I was willing to risk a considerable humiliation. You know, here I was coming a stranger into this situation to these very fine university folk, and I had to get up from the dinner with my host couple to go to an AA meeting. And as I tell the story in the book, I was prepared for that. What I wasn't prepared for was arriving at the little church down there in Virginia and seeing, as soon as I entered the room, a man that I had met that day, a professor in the law school. And I was just stunned, you know, just stunned. Here's the expert showing up, you know, at an AA meeting. Well, he couldn't have been nicer. At the end of the meeting, he approached me and said, I'll never forget these words, "Well, I knew there was something about you that I liked." And he was there with his wife, that they apparently sort of do AA and Al-Anon together in meetings down there. So, he had found his spirituality there too, as I learned later in our contacts over the years. So that was really some experience.
It also says to me something that I found very interesting, that it seems to me that you didn't have a problem with denial. But
no.
you had a problem with shame.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And we hear so often about denial keeping people from getting help, but we don't hear about other possibilities, other things that keep people away from the help they need.
Right. No, shame was certainly the case for me. I mean, a woman religious, and it may function in the same way. I'm not sure. For doctors, you know, or other professional people, but I was very ashamed in the kind of life that I was committed to living to this being involved in this rather unworthy practice. I don't mean social drinking or anything like that, but I mean alcoholic drinking. I'm not sure that I answered your question, did I?
I think you did.
Yes, I think other people suffered too. I think maybe a lot of people who sort of identify themselves as the perfect mother, you know. I mean, that's who I am, the perfect mother. And here I am, perhaps drunk in front of my children, or as I tell in the book also, I've heard this from women in sobriety. They tell it with horror, driving my children's carpool while intoxicated. I mean, there's a great deal of shame, I think, attached to most people, except for people like, to be stereotypical for a minute, you know, the young guys for whom drinking is a matter of boasting almost. But it certainly wasn't that for me.
You were advised to attend 90 meetings
yes.
in 90 days.
Yes.
And that says to me that meetings are really important.
Essential.
Why are the meetings so critical?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I know this isn't the answer to give, but you'd almost have to read the book, you know, to know that. How would one sum it up? Well, there's a certain commitment involved. There's a great deal of hope given. I think maybe that's what was, because you're in a room with people, many of whom don't look like they could or should be alcoholics at all, and they're happy, and there's a lot of laughter at AA meetings. So their presence and example gives one a lot of hope. I recognized very early on that I always heard the truth at AA. There was no, what am I trying to say here? Well, it was the truth. People are uncommonly honest about their drinking and what it got them into, but it was also clear that there was no other motive involved. Nothing else was being sold except sobriety, which it was made very clear was for your own good, and a great desire on the part of the people there for you to become sober and share in the benefits of it. And I found that in those early days especially, attendance at a meeting gave me some peace of mind from this emotional and mental turmoil and obsession that I was in, that if I really listened at meetings, I got out of myself for a little while. And if I didn't stir it up afterwards, I had some peace of mind and heart for until the next meeting. And there's a lot to learn at AA. So, and it isn't organized. You know, there's no curriculum, except you could think of the steps as kind of a curriculum. But I mean, you just hear whatever it is the people speaking are inspired to say, and so it's. To get the whole picture, you kind of have to attend faithfully, I think.
Sister Molly Monahan is our guest this afternoon here on the Afternoon Magazine. Sister Molly, by the way, is a pseudonym. We're talking with her about her experiences with alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous. She has written a memoir about that. It is titled Seeds of Grace, A Nun's Reflections on the Spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous. Listeners, you're invited to join the discussion this afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, the number 333-9455. Anywhere else, call toll-free 1-800-222-9455. Let's talk with a listener waiting for us in Taylorville, Illinois, on the toll-free line. Good afternoon.
Yes, good afternoon. I am not trying to defend alcoholism. It's a dreadful disease. I should know because I'm one, and I'm not altogether recovered. I'd like to make a reference to the concept of the spirituality of alcoholism. Unfortunately, I'm not trying to intoxicate somebody with the concept. that's foolish, and that's mean-spirited, and that's wrong-headed. But there is a way that certain substances affect the brain. It's almost mm-hmm. like certain entities having sex with themselves in their minds. That there's something about language, for example, and the way it affects people with the writing problem, which I have, and I don't want to sound narcissistic, but I'm rather good at it on occasion. I've been rather good. I really believe that there's a certain notion of despair of it's connected with the concept that when we die, we're really and truly dead, despite all the idiot religions the human race has confabulated. And I'm one with people like John Cheever, who said he could determine whether somebody had a drinking problem or not by reading his prose. But I think that Cheever wouldn't have written some of the excellent stories he had written if he hadn't at one time been an alcoholic. He recovered, like that wonderful longish short story called The 548, about this woman who had been abused by her employer. And she gets him on this train, and she's got a gun. I won't tell you how it ends, but it's a wonderfully fine story. There's this great Chinese poet who I think Li Po, perhaps the best known of the lot, and I guess he literally drank himself to the point of oblivion. There's a story about him being on this boat on a river. It's a lovely story, as it's told in a kind of fairy tale way, and he saw the reflection of the moon on the river, and he reached out to embrace it, and in doing so, he drowned. I think that the actual realistic story is probably a lot simpler. He just was dead drunk, and he fell out of the boat.
Hmm. Let's give Sister Molly a chance to talk with us about the concerns that you've raised here in the last moment or two.
Mm-hmm. I don't exactly know how to respond. Let me say this, and this isn't in the book, but I think alcoholism does affect writers, and I think we see the history of it in our own American literature. Hemingway committed suicide. I've seen TV clips of poor Truman Capote trying to stumble through an interview, and everybody's wondering why he isn't producing the great American novel. And I've often thought to myself, well, they wouldn't have wondered that if the poor guy had been dying of cancer. Do you know what it is I'm trying to say here? Either Celeste or the gentleman. I mean, it does affect our mental capacities, without a doubt. I just read a review of Dashiell Hammett, who stopped writing for years. But I rarely see in what I read this inability to write connected with drinking, and I think it may more often be related than is usually brought forward. About belief in an afterlife, I should say that there are no dogmas whatsoever in AA. Not only are there no dogmas, there is no proselytizing. One of the things I love about AA is the utter freedom it allows its members, and the utter freedom it allows each of its groups. There's no central authority telling you what you have to believe or what you have to do and how you have to do it. Mm. And even in the case of sponsors and sponsorship, although sponsors can be quite firm in helping alcoholics through the steps and so on, there there are no rules, and one hears very different ways of going about everything at its best, tailored to the needs and personalities of the persons involved. So the freedom in the AA, in the way AA goes about its mission, is wonderful, I think. And I should have said, when you asked me earlier, Celeste, something about the benefits of meetings and of AA, the freedom achieved is precious. And I don't only mean the freedom from alcoholic drinking. I mean a great freedom of spirit, a freedom to be generous instead of to be selfish, a freedom from obsessive thinking, freedom from other kinds of compulsions. So the freedom that AA tenders is very important to me.
That comes through in your book as you talk about people that you've met through AA and all the different kinds of people that you meet and how everyone is free to be who they are.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And, I mean, no, none of this is perfect, of course. You know, none of it is perfect. But there's very, at least I experience, very little of anything that looks like overt discrimination against people of whatever color. In fact, I heard a story since I wrote the book of of somebody who is sponsoring a man whose house the sponsor broke into in his drinking case. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it? I mean, one hears just wonderful stories like this over and over again. So, you know, if for no other reason, I just find AA meetings so helpful because the whole human drama is there in one way or another, and the whole human comedy, I must say. Mm.
Let's talk with some other listeners. Next, we go to a caller in Urbana on line one. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Sister Molly, what you were saying about stories, I go to meetings too, and sometimes I tell people, you couldn't write, you couldn't put it in a soap opera and people
yes,
wouldn't believe.
True. It's true.
It really is. It's
yes.
Like you could not make this stuff up.
You could not
it's too outrageous.
Make it, you could not make it up and you could not present it more engagingly.
That's
I,
true.
I mean, both the tragedy and the comedy, because people are speaking so completely from their own experience that it's really high drama and wonderful.
It is. It's very, very entertaining on some level.
Yes, yes.
I wanted to ask you about, well, you said there's no proselytizing in meetings, which I would disagree with. I think ideally there wouldn't be, but I think it does happen that, you know, it's not perfect. And,
no, it
and,
isn't.
And there's certainly, but how do you, are you a Catholic?
Oh, yes, I'm
yes.
a nun.
Okay, right.
I'm Catholic nun. There
right.
are other kinds of nuns.
Right, and that's what I was clarifying, because such two divergent ways to get at spirituality, having been raised Catholic myself and not ever been able to reconcile the, you know, the rules that come with Catholicism and having found my spirituality through 12 steps and the total lack of rules. And I just wondered how that works in your life, how you can really, how you can bring those two together.
Bring those two together. Well, I do that in the book, actually, in the last section. The last chapter is entitled, My Name is Molly and I'm a Catholic. I'm willing to admit that as well. And I address in that chapter the question I'm sure you hear it all the time, I found spirituality in AA and not religion. And by religion, I think people mean just the things you're talking about, rules and regulations and somebody telling you what you have to believe and think and so on and so on and so on. Well, I think two things. I think that the institutionalized religions, the churches, synagogues, etc., could learn a lot from AA, and I try and suggest some ways in the book that they might learn. And secondly, for me, for me. AA of itself would never be enough, I don't think. My experience in AA has brought my experience of being lost and in need of salvation has brought me to a new appreciation of salvation, as we refer to it, you know, in Catholic language. It's brought me to a new appreciation, a new understanding of what sin is. And for me, it's brought me to a new appreciation just by having me ask the question. I'm so happy to be saved in AA. You know, I'm asking myself, am I that happy to be saved, you know, as a Christian? And if I am, what part has Jesus played in that? So I raise those questions and give the reader the answers that I've come up with so far, at any rate. I think the churches are missing out in the treasures, really, that there are to be found in the ancient religions, the spiritual treasures. And by stressing all this, these other matters, those spiritual treasures go unnoticed and unappreciated.
Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we go to Chicago, a listener on line two. Good afternoon.
Hello, sister, by listening here, I have a question,
mm-hmm.
But before that, I'd like to make a couple of statements. Well, first, I am, you know, thank goodness I have not ever had any problem with alcoholism, but, and I'm also Catholic, was brought up as Catholic. And I learned my spirituality not through AA, but through through my mother and father, who were very spiritual,
yeah.
And also some wonderful priests
mm-hmm.
that were part of my life in growing up. I do state that I think the American Roman Catholic Church has changed tremendously to have become so extremely liberal and, shall we say, socialist. I think they've forgotten that they are a religion and supposed to bring spirituality to their congregation. Not all of them, of course, but it's just too much. But I did want to ask you, and maybe you cannot answer it through your experience, do you feel that there is a connection if someone is manic depressive, and if they are an alcoholic, or like, is there, what comes first, the chicken or the egg, or you don't know?
I can't answer that question.
Mm-hmm.
I do know, I've had firsthand experience actually with somebody with both of those diseases, and it's a very difficult condition.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very difficult condition to be living with both of those diseases. What I do know, however,
well, I'm wondering if they're related.
That not drinking helps even those people. They're worse off
mm-hmm.
if and when they're drinking.
Right.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but you don't know. That might be a like a.
Well, alcohol is a depressant,
illness.
Alcohol is a depressant. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
pharmacologically or pharmaceutically
right.
or whatever. It is that is its description.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's that connection.
But you know.
Yeah.
But. Mm-hmm. But if someone was depressed, they may take to alcohol. But what if they're a manic depressed?
Well,
person.
I think maybe the alcohol contributes to the depression as well
yes.
as people trying to relieve it by drinking, which is mistaken.
Yeah.
The manic part of it, the only relationship I see there is people are more likely to drink when they're. Well, I don't know. No, I don't know that. I don't know that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I was just wondering about
yes.
that.
Yes.
Thank you,
you're
sister.
Welcome.
Thanks for the call
right.
this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Sister Molly Monahan is our guest this afternoon. We're talking about Alcoholism and Alcoholics Anonymous. Sister Molly is the author of Seeds of Grace, A Nun's Reflections on the Spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous. We've talked about the importance of meetings.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the 12 steps are also critical.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
And you note a connection between the steps in finding sobriety
mm-hmm.
and the first steps anyone takes toward a spiritual life.
Yes. Yes, it occurred to me quite a ways into thinking, when I was quite far into thinking about what this book might contain, it occurred to me that the steps really follow the ancient threefold spiritual path known as the purgative, the illuminative, and the unitive ways. And those are to be thought of as a progression, you know. And the case can be made, or at least I tried to make the case, that the steps really follow that ancient path, because a good number of the steps are involved in the purgative way, that is, getting rid of those things in one's life, sometimes called sin or sinfulness or character defects, not getting rid of them, but at least dealing with them in a helpful way, I don't remember how I began that sentence. Let me just say that there are a number of steps. Steps 4 through 10 deal with our character defects, with recognizing them, with asking to be rid of them, with making amends to the people that we have harmed by them, with keeping a daily kind of inventory, taking a daily inventory of where we are in regard to them. And that's all concerned sort of with purgation, conversion, you could call it also, in religious language. The illuminative step, the illuminative way is concerned with, as it suggests, greater light and a greater vision of God, of the higher power, a people would say. And the 11th step directs us to prayer and meditation. And then the unitive way, which is often spoken of as related to the higher states of mystical prayer. That's not the way AA talks about it. AA talks about it rather in terms of a universal love that expresses itself in service and in all of our life. And even the mystics acknowledge that, however, that when you understand or when you get a glimpse of who God is and realize that it is a God of love and that God loves all, then you realize that that's what you're called to and finally given the grace and the ability to live.
Mm. You write in the book about steps 5, 6, and 7
yeah.
being similar to what happens in the Catholic sacrament of confession.
Yes.
A sacrament that practicing Catholics will take throughout their life,
mm-hmm.
their lives.
Right.
And then steps 8 and 9 are not unlike penance.
Right.
And this raises this question in my mind. Does a person in AA ever completely complete the 12 steps?
Well, that's what the 10th step is for. The 10th step reads, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, probably admitted it. Because no, one never achieves that. And here again, I think AA shows great wisdom in talking about progress, not perfection. Now, as a young nun, I certainly thought I was supposed to be striving for perfection, but it's very liberating, isn't it, to think that it's not perfection that you have to achieve, but just a little progress.
Mm.
Let me say here, by the way, it's for just the kinds of reasons that you and I have been talking about and your listeners. It's for just the reasons that there is so much wisdom in AA spirituality that that I wish the book had a wider readership. I really wrote it with the intention of having it be of spiritual help to any reader. And it does treat of things like conversion and prayer, but it also treats of, I think, equally important forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's great freedom and peace to be found in forgiveness. Gratitude, that's a wonderful state to be in. Humility, peace of mind. These are things, I mean, I've yet to meet a human being who isn't dealing with one or some of those things at some point in life, and sometimes quite painfully.
Mm.
So I would hope that the book would offer some light to anybody.
Yeah, I think that I'm going to bring up another example here of how somebody who is not an alcoholic could benefit by reading this book is thinking about fear.
Mm, yes, I should have mentioned that. That features prominently in the AA literature, and I do discuss it in the book. All kinds of fears, and as I say in the book, I'm still immensely impressed by how freely the men in our group speak about fear, because you know, we've made some progress towards away from the macho posture, but I honestly don't know any place in the world that I've heard men talking about being beset with fear. And those are fears of all kinds, fear of economic insecurity, which is very real, isn't it? Emotional insecurity, fear in personal relationships, that's mostly how it operated in my life. Physical fear, I mean, it's not an uncommon feeling. And just using the word feeling, AA pays a lot of attention to feelings, and I think it's a truncated notion of spirituality that doesn't acknowledge the enormous importance of our feelings in our spiritual life, acknowledge and help us to deal with them.
How does AA do that without getting all ooey-gooey?
It's almost never. Well, you know, it's almost never ooey-gooey in my experience, and I have to tell you, I'm not an ooey-gooey person, I don't think. There are some sayings that sound ooey-gooey. One is, let us love you until you can love yourself. But I tell in the book that that was given teeth for me when I heard a man say, well, that was just the opposite of the message he got in his family, which was, let us hate you until you can hate yourself. I speak a lot in the book, too, about coming to love ourselves. I don't think we can believe God loves us until we have some little degree of love of self. Feelings... being sentimental, that was one of the sentimental sayings. But I think it isn't ooey-gooey or sentimental or touchy-feely either, because it's also rooted in people's down and dirty experience. Maybe that's the way to put it. Do you know?
Mm. I guess it becomes kind of a shorthand.
Yes. Yeah, that's what I think the slogans do. I think the slogans are a kind of shorthand for communicating about feelings. That's exactly a point I tried to make in the book.
Mm.
And not everybody is given to a kind of self-expression that's very original, but when we use those slogans and use what could be called, I suppose, the jargon of the program, I think we all know what each other mean because we've all been there.
Let's talk with another listener, this one in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Thank you so much for this program. This is Jan Jefferson. I have a comment and also a question. My comment is, really, I think seeds of grace are needed in this society, and I'm so grateful for the expression. I wish the book were selling more because I love the title. The question is, we live in an addictive society, not only alcohol, but
right.
drugs and all
right.
that stuff.
Food.
And so I wondered if you wanted to comment on that, and I'll just listen. Because
comment
I think,
on our addictive society?
Yes.
Well, I agree with you. Yes, I mean, you could include food. You could include money, couldn't you? You could include power. You could include work. I mean, workaholic has just become a commonplace term in our culture. And for all of our talk about living in a free society and so on, we are driven. We are driven. I think we're living in a society of excesses mm-hmm. in all kinds of ways. I happen to be a small person, and I tell you, I mean, I am literally bowled over by the size of portions come to me in any number of restaurants, you know? I mean, it's just incredible. And I just heard on the radio today a new report on obesity as being even more dangerous to health than alcoholism. So yes, I agree with you. I think we are an addictive society. And, of course, you know there are groups devoted. There are groups devoted to overeating, to drugs, Narcotics Anonymous, to spending, Debtors Anonymous. I haven't had experience with those, but I know they try also to follow the 12 steps. Mm. I think there also is a Sex Anonymous.
I think you're right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's squeeze in one more listener this afternoon before we have to say goodbye. And this caller is on line two in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, sister.
Hi.
Hi, I'm also a friend of Bill W.
And, yes, sir.
very happy to hear you on the radio here. And I've been sober for more than 3 years now, and I've always considered myself to be an agnostic atheist.
Yes.
And I really... One of the things that I love the most about the program is the fact that it's a way into spirituality for anyone.
That's right.
I'm glad
you're making that point, because that's absolutely true in my understanding.
Yeah, it's something that I never thought I needed.
Nope.
I thought it was just for weak-willed or
yes.
foolish people, and I found out that it gives things that people need that they don't even know they need.
Yes, I think that's absolutely true, and... One of the things that I think is wonderful in AA is people who never thought they could or would want a spiritual life really find one.
Yes.
And find one that suits themselves, as you have found.
And find out that they're saving their lives and actually getting more than just...
Getting much more.
Than just simply not drinking.
Than simply not drinking,
yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
I remember the last caller I was listening also. I think you Christians have a really good way of approaching that, what she was talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think what she was talking about was idolatry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how this society especially makes their higher power the dollar.
Yep.
And various other things. But
yep.
that's kind of the way I look at it.
Yes. Idolatry, the only thing I'd add to that is that I think people in those conditions lose their freedom
yes.
to act otherwise. So it's not as if you're freely choosing, as it were, to worship other gods.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's slavery.
It's slavery, absolutely.
Well, God bless you.
And thank you, and God bless you, too.
Hope to see you. Come to Champaign. We'll welcome you here.
Buy my book.
We'd love to see you. Oh, certainly. I look forward to reading your book.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call this afternoon. It seems to me here in the end, as we talk to the last couple of callers, it almost seems to me that Alcoholics Anonymous allows people, in a sense, to empty themselves of poison and fill themselves up with something that's worth living for.
That's a wonderful way of writing, of saying it. Yes, it is.
Sister, thank you very much for talking with us.
Yes,
this afternoon.
And I'd like to thank you. I thought your questions were wonderful, and I'd like to thank the people who called in and the other listeners.
Thank you so much.
Right.
Sister Molly Monahan has been our guest in this portion of the afternoon magazine. That name, by the way, is a pseudonym. Sister Molly has been a member of Alcoholics Anonymous for more than 18 years now. And she wanted and expected to find sobriety through AA, but what she didn't expect to find was a more meaningful relationship with God. She has written about her journey through AA to a stronger faith, to a spirituality, a stronger spirituality. The title of the book, Seeds of Grace, A Nun's Reflections on the Spirituality of Alcoholics Anonymous. The book is published by Riverhead Books.